What a lovely day, you guys. What a lovely day today this is on the White Noise Mad Max Fury Road spoiler cast. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
We have to jump right into it because that's how the movie is the entire time. It's just one giant adrenaline rush.
No, yeah, we got to jump right into it and begin with our adrenaline rush of a podcast here.
Yeah,
get everyone hyped and spoiler ready.
Let me go ahead and digest my two-headed lizard.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to take a while to get out of the system. You might want to wash that down with a
but it's an aphrodisiac.
That's crawling on your face.
It's an aphrodisiac. It gives me powers, so.
Yeah, I think there's no better film to do our first ever spoiler cast, like full pod for one, you know, thing. This is probably the best one to do it for, because one, David's been, you know, screaming the hype machine for this movie for a long time now, and even then he couldn't predict how good this movie was. Seth wasn't even remotely excited with this movie, but now he loves after seeing it. And I've seen it twice, you know, the last, like, I saw it twice in 3 days. I never even rewatched movies, which kind of tells you how good this movie is.
No, yeah, it's a ton of fun. I mean, in terms of, like, a theater-going experience, you're not going to get much better this summer than going to see this movie in theaters and being along for this thrill ride. The chase scenes, they're made with mainly practical effects. They're masterfully edited. The music is incorporated very well. The acting's rock, you know, pretty solid. You've got a ton of wild and strange characters. I mean, it's just a great thrill ride to start the summer off for sure.
Yeah, don't ask the box office, though, just because Pitch Perfect 2 doubled it.
Unfortunately.
I'll probably see that later this week to see if it's actually deserving. But, nah, this was a movie I came in with no expectations and came out, you know, I won't say loving it or, you know, blown away, but, I mean, it was a great movie. It was very little to hate about it. It was well put together, a lot of moving parts on it that make it great. And, you know, that's pretty much it. I mean, it was a good movie. What more?
Meanwhile, me and David think it's one of the best action movies ever made.
I haven't seen enough action movies to say that, but, you know, I mean, it was a good movie.
If action movies, you know, like this aren't necessarily your cup of tea, you might not appreciate it enough as much on a personal level, maybe, than some other films are going to come out this year. But for people that, you know, really enjoy the Mad Max franchise and enjoy that kind of action film genre, that kind of, I guess, kind of that B-movie genre, this is about as masterful of a B-movie as you're going to get.
But even, you know, I agree, it's still pretty much a masterful B-movie because that's kind of like the genre of what it is. But in terms of an action movie, I don't think anything else in recent memory even comes close to the scale and level of what this movie does.
I've watched a bunch of good movies, you know, like fucking... Yeah. Oh, excuse me, there's my one. I mean,
We get one a podcast. One each or one overall as a group, I'm not sure.
Well, Seth shouldn't have any at all for the amount that he, you know, drops on accent. We actually, fun quick story, we were doing WVFM. I was the local Tuscaloosa, you know, Alabama radio broadcast. I was the host. I brought Seth on for fun because he was just hanging out. He's the stadio head, you know, studio head, and he drops an F-bomb.
Yeah. Well, you just can't help yourself sometimes.
It's not my fault that, you know, everyone else on the show is being, you know, fucking morons, but, you know.
Oh, we get two. That means I can't say mine.
Oh, no, I just had to recreate it verbatim. It's actually funny that I forget where I read it, but one of the reviews of this kind of compared it to Edge of Tomorrow, which I watched last night, and it kind of has that same vibe of, you know, just a movie that's exceeds the expectations wrought upon it. And, you know, it's kind of, I won't say it's a sleeper because it's, I don't remember this one, you know, any movie having the same type of hype of it. But I mean, I'd agree completely that this is a movie that, you know, is definitely above its pay grade in terms of what was expected and what it actually accomplished.
Definitely. Definitely. I think that Edge of Tomorrow is a fairly, fairly good, you know, comparison of recent action films that have come out in the last few years with, the, like you said, the same sort of expectations that were put on those movies
I'd even throw Ghost Protocol in there.
Ghost Protocol was a good one, too.
But I would say, like, you know, Edge of Tomorrow is decently interesting kind of comparison because it's such a unique movie as well, but it's still pretty well drawn into the sci-fi, you know, realm. This is kind of something nothing, like, there's no other movie remotely like Mad Max or Mad Max Road Warrior or anything, like, or even Thunderdome. Fury Road's coming out at a time where nothing is remotely like this movie, and the intro is kind of fascinating because you could argue that you have no idea what's going on in the intro if you've never seen a Mad Max movie before, but I think it kind of perfectly sets up everything that's going to happen, and even the main character, Tom Hardy, you would think he'd kind of get introduced into the main plot through a way other than him being the blood bag on one of the War Boys machines,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely just kind of takes your expectations, throws them out the window, and does things in kind of the way that's, I guess, counterintuitive to what normal movie making entails in terms of narrative structure, while also remaining very simple. And, you know, it's a simple story, but it does have this lore that it kind of throws at you and doesn't really explain it compared to other movies that would, like we were talking about earlier, Seth, how other movies would go through a bunch of exposition to explain to you every little detail of what's happening in the world that you're watching on this film. Mad Max, on the other hand, just kind of throws out these things here and there and kind of, I guess, has you take it for, like, has you just absorb it and look at it how you will.
And exposition is honestly overrated, in my opinion, which is I'm starting to learn from more recent, you know, shows. Like, the best part of Daredevil was how little they went to his backstory. And probably the weakest episode I think they have is episode 7 with Stick, where they go back into the backstory. And this movie, the fact that they just kind of show and don't tell for the entire movie is probably one of its, you know, greatest strengths. I'm not constantly being told what's going on. I'm just enjoying it, and I see it for myself.
A lot of it is putting yourself into the shoes of, you know, the movie watcher. I found myself a lot of, you know, watching the movie going through, like, whoa, what's this? Why are they doing that? Then minutes later, they tell me, you know, they tell me by showing me, like, you know, oh, what is... What are they doing to Tom Hardy? Why are they taking his blood? Okay, I see. That's for this. Or, you know, why does this happen? Why do they, you know... Like I said, it's more of an order problem than it is an actual information problem. I kind of, you know, wish I wasn't asking the questions as I was watching it. And I agree wholeheartedly with you, Billy, though, that, like, the less that they tell and the more that they show is better. But, you know, so I think that... But given how long the movie was, it was really short. I mean, I think it's less than 2 hours.
Yeah, I think it's 2 hours
exactly
right
hours.
On the dot.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
a
short movie for what it tries
hours.
To show you.
And, you know, they were very economic with their time, and they probably could have thrown in, you know, I'm not asking for a lot, maybe 5 minutes of explaining, but, you know, it might have made it a little better. But that being said, I mean, it was a movie that didn't, you know, you couldn't tell. I think that the movie existed just fine without all of that, you know, exposition.
I actually disagree with the idea of that. I think they had no wasted time, and I think it probably would have been slowed down too much at certain aspects if they included too much of it. I think the pacing was probably perfect.
Like I said, I mean, if they added it, it would have to be very minute, because I agree.
We're just saying, like, as a movie, as your casual moviegoer who's not familiar with what Mad Max necessarily is, going into this movie, maybe like a few more lines here or there that just kind of explain things a little bit more might have been to the benefit of the casual moviegoer. I mean, for me, I was an action junkie, and I've seen Mad Max, so I knew we were going to get some wild things, and I might have still even benefited maybe from a little bit of explanation. I mean, it's a small gripe, because I really enjoy the film the way it is, and I wouldn't want to change how it works, but I kind of agree.
Although I will say, though, that, you know, in terms of being a post-apocalyptic one, the very minimalist beginning, it does serve to its benefit. So I don't need to be told off the top what exactly things are going, you know, but just because I think that when you open a movie, it's more about mood and more about, you know, what it setting the background and the tone than it is telling what the movie's going to be about.
Yeah, and I think one thing I really like about the setting and why it's so unique is not only the fact that you see these, you know, guys dressed up like an all white or whatever, they're spraying, like, chrome paint on their mouths, you know. You have Royal Joe, who just looks, you know, they put all these things on him. He has that awesome...
Looks like Grandpa
mask.
Bane.
Yeah. But the fact is also, it's a world that's not, you know, torn apart by a nuclear apocalypse, which you normally have. You know, it's a world that, because of the oil war and stuff, there's no water anywhere. And it's kind of
by greed.
Yeah, it's a very fascinating take on... I guess, you know, when the original Mad Max came out, there was an oil shortage. And I guess that makes a lot of sense considering, you know, the late 70s to now. But it's still kind of fascinating to see this compared to other post-apocalyptic movies.
I think one thing that's really good about this film is the way it kind of makes a natural evolution of the franchise. And it takes things away from kind of like the oil wars that were kind of important and kind of imperative of looking into the future during the time of, like, the original Mad Max and the sequel. Well, this film kind of takes that natural evolution and addresses the water wars, and I think that's kind of an interesting way to kind of evolve the franchise as a whole and kind of tackle that sort of issue.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And let's get into
not that it's
actual...
like a profound film or anything, but
I think there's an argument to be made for it being profound just because of the statement it makes for, you know, feminism and really just
yeah, definitely
it's more,
that part.
More... It's less feminism and more anti-patriarchal society, but, you know,
yeah.
You could make an argument for it being profound in that way.
Okay, well, since you brought it up, I was going to wait till later because I want to get more of the actual film itself. But since you brought it up, to me, it's kind of fascinating. Maybe I think the whole Mad Max series, in a way, is looking at how, you know, people connect with each other, you know? You could argue Mad Max 1's heavily about, I guess, like the relationship between a husband and a wife, right? Road Warrior, I guess, is more about, like, communities and the way individuals interact with them. But this one... I feel like this movie is a very, you know, about the relationship between men and women. You know, you have the two completely different factions of essentially, you know, Furiosa, you know, what she grew up with is these really badass women compared to the area that you see with, you know, Immortal Joe. And I think the ending quote they have, right, "Where must we go? We who wandered the wasteland search for our better selves," is probably, I guess, the perfect way of characterizing what this movie's kind of about.
No, it's definitely interesting, yeah.
I mean, at one point, Mad Max washes blood away with mother's milk.
No, that's a little bit in your face, but yeah, that was really cool. I thought it was a very good.
It's in your
symbolic face.
But I don't know how many people actually realize that connection to what the whole film's about.
And there's, I mean, just even, you know, we can keep on some of the other blatant imageries. You know, there's the, you know, how hit by blood Tom Hardy's character was. You know, Max was linked to, you know, what he was previously when he's trying to escape and, you know, get to the you know, the rig. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, if you piece it together, there's a bunch of little things that add up to something that you think, you know, okay.
Mike actually could be profound a little bit, in a way.
I
think it's definitely interesting when you look at the male and female characters. Max is the only character in this film who's a male and, I guess, arguably a good guy for the entire movie.
Well,
and even
say,
then,
he's
a little bit of a villain towards, like, the beginning and middle of the film when he's trying to, you know, take the rig away from him, wants to leave them behind. And then there's not a single female character in this movie that can really be considered a villain either. So it's basically all the men in this film are bad, and all the women are good.
And it's also kind of funny how neutral of a movie this is in terms of, like, romantic feelings. Like, I think I read somewhere that, like, the most romantic moment in it is when, you know, Charlize Theron's character, like, uses Max to aim a gun. Like, that's the most sexual tension that we get, and that's not that much.
I think one thing that's interesting is, like, you see, like, the War Boys, and they're pretty much just bad guys by default, but they're not really necessarily bad people or bad guys. I mean, I think Nux is his name.
I think it's
the guy who,
shit.
You know, yes, I'm pretty sure it's Nux.
Okay. Yeah,
it's Nux. The sick one who, with, I guess, the two tumors on his shoulder, you know, who helps him out. He very quickly, you know, helps him out, and very willing and, you know, a very important part of what they're trying to do for the rest of it. And it's kind of interesting how he goes from complete, you know, fanaticism to realizing, I guess, you know, what's the better, you know, right thing to do in that scenario. And, yeah, you could put it simply as all the women are good and all the men are mostly bad. But it's also just kind of an interesting way of how that world is, you know, what the cycle, what to expect out of people. I mean, these women are essentially – I think they talk to Miller talked to a bunch of someone who's an expert on sex slaves before he made this movie, so he could really shape those five women.
Yeah, and, it,
you know,
and it's actually, and I'm really glad you brought up the five women, because, you know, they're all kind of distinct in their way. You know, there's the one that's, you know, pregnant and, you know, has some things.
She's the leader.
She's the leader. But there's also the one who wants to go back, and I
Stockholm syndrome.
There's a lot of facets to, as you kind of said, being a sex slave, kind of represented, and each of them are kind of different.
I mean, despite this film being so lean and so, I guess, action-oriented and not really wasting any time with exposition, so to speak, I think the film still has some very distinct and unique characters that you can kind of, you know, place a personality on each of those characters, except for maybe one or two. I think, like, the important characters in this film are very well fleshed out, actually.
And I don't even care that, like, you know, Tom Hardy's not Mel Gibson, because I think he still does a very good job, even if he's not as good. Because no one can be as charismatic and interesting as Mel Gibson while not saying anything.
Especially in this role. I mean, it's Mel Gibson's role that he invented. I mean, it's...
But, yeah, pretty much. But Tom Hardy does a good job, like I said, at nailing me, like, the fact that he's a loner who can never quite be alone, you know, the deadness in his eyes, you know, it's I think he does a very good job.
No, he does a very good job, I agree. I do think, though, if I was looking at weaknesses for this film, I would say that maybe his performance might have been a little bit too restrained for my taste, for the Mad Max that I think of.
I don't know. I kind of thought there was a good amount of brevity with it, just because sometimes when I heard him talk, his accent kind of bugged me. But, like, that's only in a very few of the deliveries. But, I mean,
it's a little bit veiny.
I don't know. I think that maybe it's just because I've grown up playing, you know, video game protagonists who don't say a word, you know, a la Link or something. He doesn't need to say anything for me to know what's going on.
I mean, you're making an argument that he isn't the protagonist in this film.
Yeah,
you can make an argument.
He isn't really – yeah, he's kind of a co-protagonist. But even then, the movie's not really about him as much for Yosa. And I think the ending scene really kind of showcases that more.
And honestly, like, outside of the first film – each of these Mad Max films kind of isn't really about Mad Max. He's kind of a vehicle to look through another story through. He's like the kind of, like you said, the anti-hero to watch what this other story is going on around him. He's kind of the result of he reacts to the reaction, like to the actions
really
of the people around him, like the road
really
warrior.
He's just really the vehicle for which the plot goes through, which you don't usually see a person as, I guess, the main device or vehicle that the movie happens through, but that's what it really is.
Especially an iconic character like Mad Max.
It's probably a bad comparison, but like Forrest Gump, where Jenny's probably the one who goes through more character arc.
Yeah, I mean, that might be a decent, that's a decent comparison, really.
I don't know, because at least Forrest Gump's a very fleshed out full character.
Yeah, no, like I said, it's probably a poor comparison, but, you know.
I just like the idea of comparing Mad Max. I like the idea of comparing Mad Max to Forrest Gump. I think that's pretty funny.
And, you know, before we get to, I guess, the parts of the movie that I enjoy the most, which is more of the thrill ride, it is kind of interesting the way of, like, I guess, you see these different characters and the way the setting's set out, and there's just kind of this, like, cycle of, you know, of the way they use women and the way men are supposed to act and the way women act, and it's just kind of wonder, like, will any of that ever end? And, you know, you kind of wonder what would happen after, you know, Furiosa, the rest of them get back to the place. You kind of wonder what happens next. Is it just going to be a same cycle of the same events happening over and over again, or is something going to change? And that's kind of the question this movie really asks, in the way that men and women treat each other.
Yeah, I think that's a very
well
worthy
put.
Question.
Yeah. All right, now let's get to the cool part. So they drove a giant war rig into a giant desert storm sent from the hand of God himself, and we saw something get picked up in a sand tornado and thrown away, and that wasn't even the best action scene of the movie, which just tells you how awesome this movie is.
The action's nonstop. My favorite action scene, though, is I think it's right before they get to the right after the canyon. I think it's after the sandstorm as well, though. But it's just so much to like, and a lot of the action, I think, is let me backtrack a little bit. One of my favorite Breaking Bad episodes is the Great Train Robbery.
Yeah, I think all of us love that one.
Dead Freight.
Dead Freight, there it is. I forget where I got the Great Train. Not important. That's one of my favorite episodes.
Everyone knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, and a lot of it is less because, you know, of what they're actually doing, but because of how it's shot. Not a frame is out of place. You know, you see the close tight shots of him closing the clamps, of him tightening the screws, loosening this and that, and fire, you know, everything that you need to know about is shot and shot beautifully. And that's kind of the same thing that was in the back of my mind watching every single action scene in Mad Max.
There's a guy who literally they taught the guitarist, Doof guy or whatever I think is his name. They taught him he had to play guitar while jumping up and down on a jumping cord and blindfolded, and he trained for like a month or whatever to learn how to do that, which is a real guitar. And the whole movie, it's like in a world full with CGI effects, you know, outside of obviously the storms, obviously CGI, a lot of it's like just real stunts, you know, and I think that's probably the kind of beauty of this movie is the nonstop adrenaline rush of actual real stunts.
I think that's definitely kind of part of the novelty of this film. I mean, films like this aren't made anymore. You don't get big budget, practical effects, R-rated action films that are post-apocalyptic and have bizarre qualities in the nature of the film. I mean, you don't really get that anymore in today's Hollywood.
With a guy with a flamethrower shooting out the guitar as they're driving, you definitely don't get that.
You don't
anymore.
See that kind of stuff.
And it's kind of actually the way, I guess, the action's done, too, because you never really – it doesn't really have any pauses, you know? It doesn't really even have any peaks either. It's just kind of a constant rise the whole way through, and you really can't even catch your breath at all. I mean, the ending scene, which is probably, in my opinion, far and away the best action scene. I disagree with you completely, except that anything other than the ending action scene.
Yeah, no, the stick –
Yeah, the guys in the poles coming back and forth, you know, just the constant action, the way the different things are going through, and compare that with the drama that's going on. It's so incredible. It's so well executed. It's something you really won't see because, honestly, your heart rate will never slow down during that whole scene, which is kind of a rarity in movies.
I'm more saying that, you know, when I was feeling it, quote unquote, everything was together, the action, the, you know, the emotion, the feelings, the, you know. And the music, I guess the music was something that I took notice to as well in the scene that I'm talking about. Just, you know,
I think it's because this is the way you kind of realize that Tom Hardy's kind of on their side, mm-hmm. and it makes you a little happy.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it. But it's also the fact, the emotional resonance of seeing, you know, the wife, you know, fall off the rig.
Yeah,
and
that was rough.
Get, quote unquote,
that was one of the roughest scenes in the film right there.
And get, quote unquote, run over.
Even they cut the baby out of her.
Yeah.
And it's dead.
And I think it's definitely a very well executed scene in terms of like, what's that emotional resonance. But in terms of action,
yeah, no, like I said, I'm, you know, you're right. I agree that, you know, the pole vaulting thing is something that is incredible. I don't think I've seen anything like it in a movie, and they do it in a way that, you know, it makes sense. I mean, it doesn't make sense, and none of this makes sense in this movie. But I didn't sit there and go, wow, that couldn't happen. I'm like, oh my god, that's actually happening.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool. We talk about the personalities of the wives. Seeing the woman who essentially had Stockholm syndrome, kind of gave up when the leader of the five women died. She actually ended up tricking Apollo's son. I can't remember
his name. Rictus Erectus.
Rictus Erectus. Yeah, I couldn't remember his
very
name.
Very appropriately named character.
Yeah.
Giggity.
The giant doofus of a son. Anyways, like, she tricked him into putting him on the main, you know, car so she could help figure out how to get up it.
No, yeah, it was definitely a very cunning move that you were kind of not really expecting. You thought she was going to maybe betray Max and the gang. That's kind of what I was thinking when I was watching. I was like, this girl's going to have severe Stockholm syndrome. She's gonna put the entire group in danger.
Yeah, actually, here's some of the these are the names of the wives, by the way, I just looked up. You have Engelhard, Capable, Cheeto, Toast, and Dag.
But you forgot, such like, a George you forgot, Miller like, the name. The patronymics or whatever. It's Toast the Knowing. And the splendid anger, Ed. I mean, that's like, no, I agree. Like, I think we need to know more about those names because those
Cheeto
are great
the fragile.
Names. Cheeto the fragile.
Oh, and then some of the other people. It's like you have the people eater, keeper of the seeds,
the bullet the organic, farmer,
the organic mechanic.
What do you think, Billy? What do you think your Mad Max name of honor would be?
Like, what do you mean? Like, my name, let's see. It'd have to sound like sounds well together. I like the organic mechanic. So, I'd have to be like,
Billy, speaker of the truth.
Billy, speaker of the truth.
I don't know. I'd probably be like June the Weekend or something.
June the Weekend.
And it's spelled like the hip hop, you know, like, Weekend, so without the E, the second, third E.
David the Shithead.
Exactly. It just.
The antagonizer, Billy.
The antagonizer.
Billy
but anyways,
Splendiferous.
What did y'all think about the villain, Premortal Joe? Was he somebody that, you're going to remember maybe as, like, a good villain?
No, okay. So, I get what... Okay, here's the deal, right? Let's start here before Seth gets into his Turd Ferguson rant. I think if you are looking for a villain who is super fleshed out, you know, and has a lot of character development, this is not that movie. That's not the point of what he is. In terms of what he's supposed to portray as a visual and being the leader of the thing, I think they do a phenomenal job. I entirely get why this is the guy that they put in that situation. That's really all that matters. We're not trying to be like, what's his motivations? What's his character like? What happened in the past that made him want to do this? That's not important. And I think that's why you're kind of scoffing at it, Seth.
No, I mean, in terms of script writing 101, what is the purpose of a villain? The villain is to, you know, challenge the protagonist and make sure that the story is moving forward. I mean, as a figurehead for the opposition, I mean, he does the job well. But, I mean,
You don't think he's a memorable character, necessarily.
Yeah, he wasn't memorable. I mean, I barely remembered that he died.
I mean, the thing is, he's not remotely close
name.
To...
I actually didn't even know his name until the ending scene where the villagers were all, Immortan Joe is dead. And I'm like, oh, that's his name. I didn't even know his name up until then. So, he wasn't memorable to me.
I feel like the Nicholas Holt's character was probably a more memorable character in this film. And he was the guy who played...
War Knox.
Like I said, he was probably to me, forgot what the cult fit that Immortal Joe runs, forgot the name of it, but he was probably the most interesting part outside of the main character group.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, I think like obviously you know they make him interesting because he has more screen time. You get to see kind of the rise and fall of his development. You know, you get to have like the heroic finish to a guy who seemed to become a bad guy. Like, and he really characterized what you know the War Boys are about in the society, and he's supposed to be a better character. That's the point. Is like. I'm not saying that, you know, Morton Joe's like this all-time great villain or anything. I just think he's well done.
No, I do too. I think he's well done as well. I think that one interesting aspect of him is he's not a physical threat necessarily at all to any of the main characters. He's a weakened guy who like runs on a ventilator, and he probably has one of the more fun death scenes I've seen in a while. With him getting his face ripped off by the
car. And my main point
about
this was the way, I guess, that Seth kind of scoffed about it, which is why, like, it's like, he was like what
a lot
do
of
you
it,
want out of it?
A lot, like I said, a lot of it was just the way the question was framed. It's like, oh, is this an all-time great? No, I mean, but I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, he's brought in there for a purpose. He's exists in the universe and the story for a purpose, and he accomplishes it.
Can we talk about his way of wasting water, though? I mean, I get the idea that, like, you know, he's the only guy with water, but just pushing those little two things and the water comes out, it's just a complete waste. It's very inefficient. You know, I wish they would have had a better system. Maybe that's how they got in the situation to begin with, because the world is kind of built on greed. But come on,
they just pour water all over the desert.
Yeah, let's just cut out the most precious resource we have. Let's just dump it.
But hey, then we wouldn't get a scene of water falling out of a skull's mouth, like a waterfall, into the desert. We wouldn't have gotten that scene.
Yeah. they find the reserves. It's actually kind of interesting. I was thinking about this. So the only time you actually really see nudity in this movie, right, for an R-rated movie with all these, you know, sex life. The only time you see it is two times. One, you have the woman, you know, in charge of, like, it's like Furiosa's old people, right? You know, the mother. What are they called? The something mothers.
The grandmothers who drive motorcycles.
the awesome, we'll call awesome them grandmothers. Okay, yeah.
The best grandparents ever.
Yeah, so the one woman's, you know, she's naked, but she's pretty much bait, right? As a trap, you know, to try to lure them in. But obviously, you know, they're not the bad guys, so it wasn't a big deal. And the other time is you see these giant women, they're literally just farming milk off them.
Yeah, it's definitely not a sexy movie, despite, you know, having metallic chastity belts around their, you know, around their private
nether regions.
Their nether regions, so to speak, like you said.
Of them, like, the last thing she did before running off toward the Warwick was kicking it.
No, exactly. I mean, this is definitely a film that kind of subverts your normal expectations of what is it, an R-rated action film.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about subverting tropes. How do you guys feel about we go and they're on their way to paradise and then they decide to go back?
Well, they find out. It's kind of like the whole movie essentially. Let's spend, you know, 3/4 of the time going one direction and we'll spend the last 1/4 going the other. That is kind of a little silly, but you know, I think it works. And the fact is, there is no paradise there, so I guess I get why they do. But I love it because it's just unique and it's a little different from what you'd expect. Yeah. They're reaching the destination is not the conclusion. There's not like some final battle or anything. It's, okay, we went here. There's nothing there. Oh, they're stupid. With their greed and their power, you know, that's the reason why there was no one at the Citadel. That's why they were able to do that.
And how did I word it to you? How did I word it to y'all, guys? I mean, I said that as silly as it seems to go back from whence you came, I valued that surprise, and I definitely didn't see it coming. So.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. I mean, I kind of expected that there would not be any paradise waiting for them. I feel like that was kind of an obvious conclusion in this world of, you know, of desolation, that there wouldn't be some green place for them to find as like a paradise. But I certainly did not think they were going to go back. But it kind of made sense given the options that were on the table for them to make. And it seemed like the logical step in the story, even though it was a surprise.
So one thing interesting about this movie was he'd been wanting to make this movie, you know, Miller. He's been trying to make this since, like, 1998, right? And a ton of different incidents have happened which caused the movie to be delayed so much. I think maybe that's why this movie's so good, because he's had this movie in his mind for so long.
He didn't want to waste it, for sure. This was his passion project, so to speak.
And, you know, one character, they actually had Heath Ledger was actually considered for the lead role in this movie, but, you know, obviously he died and wasn't able to. And that would have been kind of fascinating, imagine Heath Ledger as Max.
Yeah, it might have been better, but I still like Tom Hardy though. He's one of my favorite guys in Hollywood.
Get the Batman villain. He died. Oh well, get the other one.
Get
then.
The other Batman villain. Yeah, exactly.
Sorry,
yeah.
That's
obviously
all respect to Heath Ledger. Obviously, may you rest in peace. But you know,
and obviously Charlize Theron. You know, she's really she was the important casting.
She's the highlight of the film for me in terms of the acting roles for sure. Like, I think that her character Furiosa is excellent, excellent female protagonist. We talk about how this is a very kind of pro-women movie, which is a little surprising, but, I mean, she does an excellent job.
Well, one thing I guess I like about this movie is obviously it has a very, you know, profound statement in that regard, but really it's just there's no way anyone, unless people just hate feminism, I guess, or any idea of women doing anything, which those are, you know, dumb, terrible people anyways. I just got rid of one of our viewers first, by the way, guys, by saying that. But if you ignore, like, there's no way that anyone's going to look at this movie and try to criticize it for anything other than what the movie is. You know, I think there's a lot of action movies. People look at it from a critical perspective and be unhappy about certain elements of it, you know? But there's nothing to dislike about this movie of what it stands for, what it's stating, and that kind of lets people judge on its own merits, and maybe that's why this movie's so high on Metacritic.
Yeah, and a lot of it, too, I mean, it's just a movie that there's nothing really to dislike about it. And that's, in one way, that kind of shies it away from, you know, being critically reviled just because there's not really that much to dislike. You know, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's so good, and the statement, and a lot of it is because of Charlize Theron, who, I wish she was in more stuff. She's great. I wish, you know, like, I'm looking at her IMDb list right here. Her last big movie was Million Ways to Die in the West, which is not necessarily something that you want on your IMDb list, I don't think.
No, I mean, it's unfortunate. She, like, every time I see her in a movie that is kind of a disappointment, it kind of upsets me because she's such a great actress and you want her to be in these great roles and these great films. And I'm glad she certainly struck gold with this one, but like you said, the last two ones, A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Well, and Prometheus was good, to be fair.
I mean, you do like Prometheus? I'm not a big Prometheus fan.
I want us to have a long discussion about whether Prometheus is a genius, terrible movie, or a movie that tried to be genius that's just straight up bad. But anyways, you know, we're pretty much running out of time here. So real quick, just what would you say a final grade based off the David scale?
I mean,
and for those who don't know the David scale,
it's like the euro. It's just the standard form of payment and standard. And...
What do you pay? Do you pay pounds? Pay in francs?
Everyone will be grading by the David scale before too long.
Okay, pretty much it's just A plus is masterpiece, A is excellent, A minus very great, B plus great, B very good, B minus good, C plus above average, C minus mediocre, and everything below DNF means they think it's below average or really bad, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, I'm going to go with, I mean, it's kind of between an A minus and an A, but I'm going to go ahead and give it the benefit of the doubt. I'll see it again soon, and maybe that'll change my grade. You said it actually reaffirmed yours, Billy, but I'm going to give it an A. That's what I'm going to give it. I'm not going to say a masterpiece because, I mean, I think there are maybe a few issues that I mentioned that kind of keep it from being a masterpiece, so to speak, but I'll make it an A. I'll say it's definitely excellent. I mean, I enjoy it, and I full-heartedly recommend anybody who likes movies to go see this in theaters. If you like movies, you should like this movie because it's good at being a movie.
I'm kind of in the same boat. A minus, you know, maybe B plus, closer to a B plus than it is to an A in terms of where on the A minus it is. I liked it a lot. It was a great movie. It had a little something for everyone. You know, it wasn't a funny movie, but it, you know, you don't go to that kind of movie expecting to laugh. It was a great action movie, very well acted. My argument for A, you know, the A pluses is that you kind of know when you walk out of a theater, and I just didn't have that feeling. I don't think that while engaging and, you know, just engaging and very engrossing, I wasn't absolutely enthralled and immersed into the world, so to speak. But, I mean, it was as great a movie experience as I've seen in the last couple years, so A minus.
I like
it. Well, I'm going to say that I have it as an A. It's pretty affirmed as an A. Obviously, it's not going to be an A plus because nothing really deserves an A plus unless it's like, you know, Shawshank Redemption or something.
Or
you know?
Raging Bull.
Or all that greats. Yeah, and it's not, and it doesn't try to be that kind of movie, but really for what it is, it couldn't be any better. There's not really, even though you obviously want some, you know, moral exposition, there's nothing I want more out of this movie. I think, I mean, we've already talked about that stuff, but the point is, like, there's nothing I want more out of this movie. It couldn't be any better in terms of an action movie, right? If you ignore all the other good things we have, you know, about the message of the movie or the statements it's making or even the world, if you ignore all that and just focus on how good it is in an action movie, this action movie is way better than every other movie that's come out in the last couple of years. Like, there's nothing even touches it, what it does from a pure thrill ride effect standpoint. And in that regard, it just completely cements the fact that this is easily an A for me. And I saw this movie twice in one weekend, and I don't rewatch movies, so that means no one else has any excuse not to go see it now.
Yep.
Yay. I like it. I like it. That's good. I mean, I agree with you. Definitely an A. I mean, an A. You can make an argument there's an A minus because it does have some issues. It's not a perfect film in terms of.
To be fair, more exposition probably doesn't make it an A for me, but I digest.
All right, so that's like so. That's our first podcast, Mad Max. Obviously, if you listen to this, I hope you have seen it. But if you had not seen it yet, hopefully this will make you want to go see it. Yeah, it's incredible. That's all the time we got. Check out White Noise Weekly every Friday, I think, is when I put it up. Sometimes on Thursdays, sometimes on Saturdays when I'm lazy. But anyways, I'm Billy White.
I'm David Hunter.
I'm Seth Juniak.
See y'all next time, everyone.
Yeah.